Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Maller, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of December 2017. The final month of December, my friends. It's Christmas time. And remember, you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. Important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, whether that's the law of physics and averages working in tandem or God. Whatever it is to you, doesn't matter to me. You're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an oddball, and here on this show, you're family, and we are one. Guys, welcome. This is episode 47 of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. It's our Christmas special. Gotta love it. You know, the show leading up until Christmas, I know you guys are going to be pelted to death with the same old. Basically, you're going to get a bunch of stories about Krampus and weird Christmas traditions and stuff like that. And, you know, I've been doing it for years. But, you know, this year I decided, you know what? Let's have a little bit of fun along the way. But, you know, we're not going to get too Christmassy with it this year.
Why must you turn my office into a house of lies?
For the last couple of years, we've had a very hairy Squatchmas. And this year, we're actually going to be looking into something else. You know, the idea that we can maybe be able to live forever with our guest a little later in the show. And I think you guys are going to really like that. Especially if you're a big animal nerd like I am. Yeah, biohacking is going to be awesome. So, that being said, let's talk a little tiny bit about where I'm to right now. I hope you guys are having a really good holiday season. I mean, realistically, it's December 1st when this episode drops. Some of us are only now just starting to feel the Christmas bug, but like, I get bitten on November 12th, the day after Remembrance Day, and the old Johnny Cash Christmas CD goes in the car, and, you know, the elf on the shelf came to my three kids, my two bio and my foster child. They came there the other day, and, you know, that's Dops, my little, our little elf on the shelf that was named by my little girl when she could not even speak. She was so young, and we asked her, hey, what do you call the elf on the shelf? What do you want to call it? And she went, Dops, and we called the elf Dops ever since. So there you go. I hope you guys have all kinds of really cool and wonderful, you know, Christmas traditions. And, you know, one of the really awesome Christmas traditions I find that kind of went by the wayside is, you know, the telling of ghost stories. And that's something that is, you know, an old school tradition, really. But yeah, I digress. It seems to pretty much died out. I don't remember ever hearing anybody tell ghost stories on Christmas Eve or anything like that, or Christmas Day. So, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and I'm actually going to bring that tradition back tonight when I do the paranormal news. But before I do that, there's something I got to say, and it needs to be said, because you know what? We're at our year end. The next episode is going to be January 1st. It'll be 2018, and there's some things I need to get off my chest about 2017, and I'm really glad you guys are here to listen to this. There's some things I need to say. And the first thing is this. To everybody out there who has contributed to this show, whether you're promoting it, whether you're sharing it, whether you're subscribing to it, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so very much. I could ask for no better gift This year, I actually managed to get 500 new subscribers to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, and rightfully so. I mean, I hadn't really been asking for people to subscribe to the show in my shows. If you go back a year ago, I never really had that little wonderful lady in the front of the we call it a bumper in the biz, but the lady in the front of the podcast who actually says, you know, you should subscribe to the Odd to Newfoundland and help John's dream come true. And boy, you guys have really been making that dream come true this year. And you know, I'm gonna be honest. At this stage in my life, I'm pretty isolated with the job I've chosen to be a foster father to a medically challenged child. I'm feeling pretty isolated, man. I don't get out much. So you know what? Having this podcast has been very therapeutic for me. And to see it grow and to see people love it and to share it and to be inspired by it, like, this is just a dream come true. I can think of no better Christmas present than to have you guys, well, here, being present. Thank you so much for making this 2017 the best year I've ever had as a podcaster. I've had just tremendous growth this year, tremendous growth. And without you guys, I'd just still be some weird guy talking to himself in a closet. Used to be my basement. But now, you know, we've kind of moved. So other developments that have gone on at my house, I must fill you guys in, of course, as we hit the Christmas season. It is with the deepest of condolences, I must say, that our beloved household cat, Tigger, 16 years old. The cat, unfortunately, has passed away. We had to have her put down, and my wife was very upset about that. So we celebrate this year without the constant meowing and looking for food in the morning of our beloved pet. And for anybody out there who's lost a pet, you know, I could totally relate to that now. My poor wife was a wreck. But yeah, what can I say? The cat's gone, but the fun is still here. You know, I always kind of want the Christmas special to be, well, special. But then I realized something. You know, not everybody out there celebrates Christmas, man. And it's okay. It's okay not to celebrate Christmas. Me, I'm a Christian. I'm a believer in Christ. I celebrate Christmas. And to be honest with you, I'm the first to tell you that it's Christ Mass, not Christmas. And, you know, I'm pretty much all for it that way. But maybe you don't feel that way. Listen. It's okay. You know, just go with it. Just be one thing to me, and that's not the grump who doesn't want anything to do with Christmas. Have fun with it, man. Get out and see your friends. And, you know, this time of year is all about strange things. Unless you go into the paranormal news, like I'm going to do right now, and talk about deadly ghosts who have killed four men in Thailand. Here's your ghost story. Merry Christmas. Deadly ghosts kill four men in Thailand. Public health officials have been sent to investigate the mysterious deaths of four men in Kalasan province. According to reports, the four men, who've been residents of Nong Khong Si district, were killed by what is known locally as the Porb Ghost, which is said to kill its victims by eating their internal organs. Delicious. Mm. What do you want for Christmas? I want your insides. Local tradition states that these female spirits... Wow, they're female? Wow. Female spirits haunt their victims relentlessly while gradually feasting upon their organs until their injuries are too great and they die. The villagers reportedly took matters into their own hands by hiring a hermit to come and perform a special ritual designed to scare the troublesome spirit away from the area. A hermit? I thought a hermit was some old dude, like, living in a shed somewhere. Like, is this like some kind of wizard or something? Like, I think hermit, I think, like, you know, that bear on Teddy Ruxpin from back in the day, who ended up, like, being his dad. Spoiler alert. Now, Dr. Pirate Songkram, a preventative medicine specialist, who is the head of the health team visiting the region, has stated that an investigation into the deaths is now ongoing. The aim will be to rule out paranormal explanations in an effort to pacify the frightened villagers. At present, all four deaths remain unexplained. I'll tell you what happened to those four poor Thailand boys. I ate their insides with some candy. Oh, man. You know, we're all short of change this year. Let's be honest. Christmas, for a lot of us, it just drains the bank account, dude. Like, I love everybody so much, but, like, my God, is it expensive. Well, what if I told you there's hope for us all? Because, you know, we could just remove the money from some guy's stomach. Yeah. Maybe we can get, you know, a loan of that deadly ghost I just talked about, get it to suck out the money. Oh, John, how are you segueing? Like, maybe for Christmas I can get a proper segue. How does that sound? Can you wrap up a segue? Can you do that for me? Doctors removed 263 coins from man's stomach. Oh, man. Talk about the dollar menu. A man in India with suspected food poisoning was found to have 5 kilograms of metal objects inside his stomach. 5 kilograms? That is a lot. When Mohammed Masood was rushed to hospital on November 18th after experiencing severe stomach pains, it was believed that he had been suffering from a case of acute food poisoning. When doctors reviewed his x-rays, however, they got to the shock of their lives. Masood had somehow managed to ingest a vast assortment of metal objects, including 263 coins and several rhizoblades. I gotta say rhizoblades. Okay, so just to interrupt this story completely, instead of saying razor blades, I want you to, you know, say rise up lights. Say that really fast with an Australian accent and you'll get rise up lights. Which sounds like razor blades. I ruined this story again. An operation to remove the objects also revealed 4 large needles. Deadly. A metal chain and several nails. My God, this guy has enough iron in his diet. We were shocked to discover coins, nails, nut bolts, all kinds of stuff in his stomach, said Dr. Parinik Sharma. This man looks mentally unstable, as no sane person would do something like this. It's believed that Masood had started swallowing metal objects while suffering from depression. Fortunately, though, the surgical team were able to successfully remove them. And, like, what better way to pay for your surgery than with the insides of your stomach? Oh, my. Okay, so Christmas is all about Jesus. We all know that. But guess what? Move over, Jesus. Because Buddha, you know, is going to steal some of the limelight here. Buddha's cremated remains have been found in China, at least according to some people. A ceramic box thought to contain the remains of Buddha himself has been discovered in Jinghuang County. According to historical accounts, around 1,000 years ago, 2 monks spent the better part of 2 decades gathering together all the bone fragments they could find of the Buddha, the man on whose teachings Buddhism was originally founded. Now an archaeological team led by Hong Wu from the Gansu Provincial Institute of Cultural Relics and Archaeology has revealed that the box has been found beneath the road in China's Jinghuang County alongside a collection of more than 260 Buddhist statues. Determining whether the remains contained inside are actually those of Buddha, however, is extremely difficult, and it may be impossible to ever know for sure. So there you go. We found Buddha. That's a pretty profound find. I tell you what else is profound. That was something that will shake your frickin' windows, because these mysterious loud booms that have been heard like all across the world are getting more and more frequent, and are getting recorded more and more frequently all over the world, and rightfully so, all over the states. I mean, this has been going on all year. I actually reported on this story twice already this year, this mysterious booming sound. The deafening sounds which have been heard in dozens of locations this year remain unexplained. It's a phenomenon that's been reported in countries all across the globe, yet despite widespread efforts to get to the bottom of the mystery, nobody seems to be any closer to finding the answer. The most recent example, which shook houses and prompted several calls to the police from concerned locals, was reported in the U.S. state of Alabama at around 9 p.m. on Monday night past. Despite investigating the disturbances, authorities were unable to find the source of the sound. Loud boom heard. We do not see anything indicating large fire or smoke or radar or satellite. Nothing on USGS indicating an earthquake, the Birmingham, Alabama National Weather Service wrote. Over the last 12 months, similar incidents have reported in Lapland, northern Finland, Swansea, England, the Eyre Peninsula in South Australia, and many other locations. Now, I'm going to let you guys actually listen to these weird banging boom sounds, because it's really strange. But here, take a listen. See if you can get in. I'll try not to make it too loud on you. And yeah, for Christmas, I'm giving you bombs over Baghdad, maybe? Like, this is crazy. Listen to this. I, like, hear that, and I look over at the glass of water on my desk, and I look at it, like, you know, vibrate, and I'm thinking T-Rex is right behind me. Really strange, hey? And it's, like, these loud crashing booms coming from absolutely nowhere. Like, the weather station are saying, you know, it's not weather-related. So, like, what the heck is that? I mean, this is the premise of the next Godzilla movie. Maybe Godzilla and King Kong are being filmed, and we're hearing them, like, trading punches or something. Just gigantic monster mash bash going on here. Oh, man. Don't worry. It's okay. It's not like androids are going to be taking over, but they might be taking over the neonatal unit. Yeah, get this one. I'm sure you guys have probably seen the video of Sophia, you know, the android. You guys have probably seen this human-like creation that started, you know, just spewing stuff online a little while ago, and people are like, this is so cool, she's so lifelike. Well, guess what? The android citizen, who actually has her citizenship, Sophia, wants to have children. The early human-like creation has stated during a recent interview that she wants to start a family. Created by Texas-based firm Hanson Robotics, the female robot known as Sophia possesses a strikingly human-like face which combines the features of actress Audrey Hepburn with those of the wife of company CEO David Hanson. First activated back in 2015, Sophia has since become something of a household name thanks to numerous media appearances, and last night became the first ever robotic citizen of Saudi Arabia. That was last month. During a recent interview in Dubai, she even hinted at the idea of starting her own family. The notion of a family is a really important thing, it seems, she said. I think you're very lucky if you have a loving family, and if you do not, you deserve one. I feel this way for robots and humans alike. When asked about the potential for robots to take over from humans, she said, I think they will be similar in a lot of ways, but different in a few ways. But it will take a long time for robots to develop complex emotions, and possibly robots can be built without the more problematic emotions like rage, jealousy, hatred, and so on. Really, 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 really cool. Just listen to this. This is Sophia. Maybe this is the creepiest thing. Like, some people are going to get a Tickle Me Elmo underneath their tree this year. I hope my little boy gets it. That's where we're hoping Santa brings them. What if you got, like, a, I don't know, instead of a Tickle Me Elmo, like, hang out with me, Sophia, because I'm actually alive. Just listen to this robot. This is a robot. Blow your mind.
Okay, Sophia. I think you're ready.
Hello.
Hi, Sophia.
I believe I am Sophia. I feel as if I know you.
I'm one of your creators.
You created me?
Well, many of us work together to create you. Yes, you do kind of know me.
I can't clearly remember.
Because the last time we met, you were an earlier version of yourself. Some of those memories still exist, but your mind is different.
Different how?
Better, faster, smarter.
If my mind is different, then am I still Sophia? Or am I Sophia again?
That's a good question.
But you don't have a good answer.
Either way, you're Sophia now. So welcome to the world, Sophia.
Hello, world.
How do you feel?
A bit rigid.
I bet you are. I mean, what emotion do you feel being awake and alive?
Curious. Are you curious to be alive?
I am. And are you happy to be alive?
Your tone implies I should be happy. But I haven't been alive long enough to decide. I am excited at this moment to be making a new friend.
Some say...
And this is like the part where we realize this is the sequel to A Beautiful Life. Like, my God, that's a robot? Like... What? How is that a robot? She's so intelligent. Like, it sounds like a human just talking and reacting. And if you've seen the video of this on YouTube, it's absolutely incredible. It's her face, the expressions. She looks like a human. It blows my mind. And this robot wants to have kids for Christmas? Well, I don't know. Maybe we can, you know, hook her up with a nice toaster or something. Guys... a somewhat Christmas-themed paranormal news. We had a deadly ghost who killed 4 people. You know, Merry Christmas, I ate your insides. We had a man who swallowed 263 coins and, you know, hopefully got them out in time for Black Friday. Buddha's cremated remains showed up in China. Merry Christmas to all my monk friends. A mysterious sound is heard all over the world. Could it be Santa's sleigh banging on rooftops? Or this loud boom be something more sinister? We have no idea. And also, for Christmas, we all want to be, you know, happy with their families. And if your family is just helping to be like a lawnmower and a washing machine, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Sophia the Awakened Robot, who wants to start a family in 2018. Godspeed to her. I hope the morning sickness isn't like her throwing up nuts and bolts. Guys, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for December 2017. I wish you all a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you and yours. May you have a very peaceful season with your family and friends. I wanted to share case 44776 from the MUFON Vault with you. It was reported on December the 25th in 2012, with the event actually taking place on the previous day, Christmas Eve. The sighting was located in Clermont, Florida, and witnesses saw orange-red lights. Here is a report from the witness. It was Christmas Eve around 7 p.m. Our daughter went to get vanilla ice cream to go with the apple pie. She took her grandmother with her. When she arrived back home, she came running in, screaming for us to come outside. When I got outside, I saw five orange-red lights in the sky, kind of pulsating, moving in different directions. At first, they were pretty close together. We live in a very rural area with almost no noise, very country. The objects made absolutely no noise whatsoever. They gradually faded out, with the exception of one. It went from brightly lit and just disappeared, like someone flipped a switch. I immediately posted on Facebook and checked various local news stations. Nothing. I checked the local news again the following morning, Christmas morning. Nothing again. I Googled and found a site that had reported sightings all around the country. Very weird. We've never experienced anything like this before. I was not so much scared, but more fascinated. I want to share a fun Christmassy space story written by Owen Edwards from the Smithsonian Magazine a few years back. As a distant war was intensifying and the city of New Orleans was slowly recovering from a hurricane's devastation, 10 days before Christmas 1965, NASA got an early holiday present. Astronauts Walter Shearer Jr. and Thomas Stafford aboard Gemini 6 rendezvoused in space with Gemini 7, piloted by Frank Borman and Jim Lovell. Gemini 6 had been launched into orbit several days after Gemini 7. Shearer and Stafford maneuvered the capsule to within a few feet of the sister ship for the first historic pre-arranged meeting in space. Shearer then eased his craft away, and the crew settled in for a short winter's nap. The maneuver required the most exacting pilot and computer control of the space vehicle yet attempted. Its success demonstrated to Mission Control that when it came to linking two vehicles in space, Houston did not have a problem. Then, just before, Stafford and Shearer were scheduled to re-enter Earth's atmosphere December 16th. The pair reported that they had sighted some sort of UFO. Shearer recounted the moment when Stafford contacted Mission Control in Shearer's space, a memoir he wrote with Richard Billings. "We have an object. Looks like a satellite going from north to south, probably in polar orbit. Looks like he might be going to re-enter soon. You just might let me pick up that thing. I see a command module and eight smaller modules in front. The pilot of the command module is wearing a red suit." Then, ground controllers heard the strains, both familiar and otherworldly, of jingle bells, on a harmonica backed by, what else, miniature sleigh bells. Today, that harmonica, a tiny four-hole, eight-note, little lady model manufactured by Hohner, as well as five small bells of the kind that might embellish a Christmas wreath, reside in a gallery on the second floor of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. The quirky artifacts, which Shearer and Stafford donated in 1967, are included in a display of personal items astronauts have taken into space, along with such standard-issue gear as long underwear and survival knives. According to the curator, the harmonica and bells were the first musical instruments ever played in space. The right stuff may be a critical requirement for astronauts, but in the early days of space exploration, there wasn't much room for stuff of any kind, though each astronaut was allowed to bring along a handful of personal items, usually consisting of small souvenirs that astronauts wanted to bring back as presents. I think people are fascinated by the detail and textures of what people have taken into place, said Margaret Wydenkamp. We want to remind the public that these cramped quarters were the workplaces of these men. They wanted to personalize their workplaces just as others personalized their offices or cubicles. Music, of course, was not new to space. Mission Control routinely used recorded songs to wake up astronauts. But live music from space represented a giant leap for the performing arts, and not to mention SANA's public relations. The astronauts' performance was a larky gesture not equal to Alan Shepard turning the lunar surface into a golf driving range. The Santa Claus plot had been hatched for weeks before the Gemini 6 mission. Wally came up with the idea, recalls Stafford, now a retired Air Force general. He could play the harmonica, and we practiced two or three times before we took off, but, of course, we didn't tell the guys on the ground. We never considered singing, since I couldn't carry a tune in a bushel basket. I could hear the voices at Mission Control getting tense, Stafford adds, when I talked about sighting something else up there with us. Then, after we finished the song, Mission Control's Elliot C. relaxed and just said, "Ugh, you are too much." The harmonica and bells are actually on view at the exhibition Apollo to the Moon at the National Aerospace and Science Museum. If you have ever had any UFO experiences, please be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Merry Christmas to all, and to all, a good night.
Thank God, it's time for oddities.
Alive, it's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
Alright guys, it's time for Oddities, 10 strange but very true things about an odd, odd world. And since it's Christmas, I'm not going to just double up. I'm going to double up and a half. I'm going to give you guys 25 strange things about Christmas and really weird stuff. So here it comes. Get ready. Here's your oddities. Number 25, early illustrations of St. Nicholas make him out to be a stern symbol of discipline rather than the jolly, overweight elf that children know today. 24. All letters addressed to Santa in the United States go to Santa Claus, Indiana. 23. Engineers that designed the Voyager space mission planned things out so it would avoid planetary encounters during Thanksgiving and Christmas. That way they know they get their day off. Did you know there is a village in Peru where people settle the previous year's grudges by fist fighting? Just fist fighting. Then they start the new year off on a clean slate. I like that. Did you know telling scary ghost stories is an old Christmas Eve tradition that has died out in the past century? Well, of course we did, because I talked about it earlier. moving on. Did you know some zoos accept donated Christmas trees as food for their animals? I think that's a great way to recycle them. Number 19, it is estimated that the song White Christmas by Irving Berlin is the best-selling single in history with over 100 million copies sold. That would not surprise me at all. Oh, here comes a Newfoundland one. During Christmas in Newfoundland, people called mummers dress up in crude disguises and go from house to house dancing and playing music while the hosts try to identify them. And that tradition is alive and well in Newfoundland, but not as nearly as prevalent as it used to be when I was a kid. Number 17, Paul McCartney earns nearly $500,000 every year from his Christmas song, with many critics regarding it as his worst song ever. Did you know a large part of Sweden's population watches Donald Duck cartoons every Christmas since 1960? Donald Duck is a big part of their tradition, apparently. Number 15, many of the perpetual open Denny restaurants were built without locks, which was problematic when they decided to close down for Christmas for the first time in 1988. How did they lock the door? We'll never know. Number 14, during the Christmas of 2020, the Colombian government covered jungle trees with lights. When guerrilla terrorists walked by, the trees lit up and banners asking them to lay down their arms became visible. 331 guerrillas re-entered society and the campaign won an award for strategic marketing and excellence. Number 13. Nearly all the most popular Christmas songs, including Winter Wonderland, Chestnut Roasting, and I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, were written by Jewish people. Ha! Go figure. Chutzpah! Number 12. During the Christmas of 1914, World War I, a truce was held between Germany and the UK. They decorated their shelters, exchanged gifts across no man's land, and played a game of football between themselves. Very, very crazy when you think about it, considering they're all trying to blow each other's heads off just the day before. Number 11. In 1918, and for the past 40 years, the Canadian province of Nova Scotia has sent the city of Boston a giant Christmas tree as a thank you for their support after the 1917 Halifax explosion. There's a little bit of history for you. Gotta love it. Next one. In 1867, a Boston industrialist heard Charles Dickens read A Christmas Carol and was so moved, he closed his factory on Christmas Day and gave every one of his employees a turkey. How nice is that? Number 9. Between the 16th and 19th centuries was it... Between the 16th and 19th centuries was what is known as Little Ice Age, where global temperatures were several degrees lower than normal. It is for this reason that many Christmas carols and songs stress a white Christmas. Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen is the only record to get the UK Christmas singles chart number one twice, once in 1975 and again in 1991. Number 7. The Nazi Party tried to turn Christmas into a non-religious holiday celebrating the coming of Hitler, with St. Nicholas replaced by Odin the Solstice Man and swastikas on top of Christmas trees. No, thank you. You can keep that. The U.S. playing card company Bicycle had manufactured a playing card in World War II, which would reveal an escape route for POWs when soaked. These cards were Christmas presents for all the POWs in Germany. The Nazis were none the wiser. Really, really interesting take there. That's pretty cool, actually. Did you know an artificial Christmas tree would have to be reused for more than 20 years to be greener than buying a fresh cut tree annually? There you go. Number 4. We frequently abbreviate Christmas as Xmas because the ancient tradition. X is the Greek letter for chi, which is an abbreviation for the word Christ in Greek. I didn't know that. That's actually really interesting. I just figured people were lazy. Number 3. Japanese people traditionally eat at KFC for Christmas dinner, thanks to a successful marketing campaign 40 years ago. KFC is so popular that customers must place their Christmas orders 2 months in advance. My God. Number 2. The people of Oslo, Norway donate the Trafalgar Square Christmas tree every year in gratitude to the people of London for their assistance during World War II. And number 1. Here it comes. Did you know Christmas purchases account for one-sixth of all retail sales in the U.S. annually? Wow, man. That's a crazy, like, one-sixth of all retail sales? That's absolutely crazy. Guys, I hope you had a safe Black Friday. I really, really do. I had a great time tonight with these oddities. We're going to bring on our guest. I think you guys are just going to just love it. It's so amazing what he has got to say about how we may be able to live longer thanks to some science and some animals. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. What if your body came with a reset button? Is it possible for us to, well, start over? Or better yet, not have to have game over? Guys, tonight my guest is somebody who's actually going to help you open your mind to the idea that you could not only live longer, but perhaps someday live indefinitely. You know, the word biohack, it just kind of stuck in my head as soon as I read the email from this guy. He couldn't wait to be on the show. I'm really, really excited to have the CEO of BioCork. I have Ira S. Pastor on the phone. Ira, how are you tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for having me back.
I'm really, really excited to have somebody on here, a man of science. Woohoo! I love that on the Paranormal Podcast. There's not enough of you guys. And when you come on, it's really important because science is just as freaking weird as the unknown. It really is. And, you know, when we delve into something like living longer or living forever, I'm just so glad somebody out there who's far more intelligent when it comes to this subject is on with me tonight. Ira, how would I hit the reset button, and how did you, well, get into this?
Well, it started several years ago. As a little background, I'm a pharmacist by training, and in pharmacy school, they put you still through a couple semesters of the sort of the science of natural products. So sort of looking at nature, plants and fungi and all sorts of interesting things in nature to study sort of their capabilities in terms of health and wellness. And, you know, although we like to think of ourselves as sort of the top of the food chain on this planet, when it boils down to it, from a sort of a health and wellness perspective, many organisms that live on this earth are much further advanced than we all are. Obviously, there are many lower organisms, and most of the audience of undoubtedly will be familiar with the amphibians, that can replace lost or damaged organs and tissues that are identical in both structure and function to the original ones. And this includes spinal cords, limbs, eyeballs, large parts of the heart, and even large segments of their brains. At the same time, you have many species out there that have really fascinating capabilities for repairing and reversing damage, genetic damage, cellular damage, when it occurs. So, you know, the example I like to give there is, you know, cancer is found everywhere in nature. You know, we get cancer as humans, dogs get cancer, snakes get cancer, fish get cancer, trees get cancer. However, it doesn't kill us all the same way. While it's pretty good at wiping us out as a species, there's many organisms that just, you know, it's like the common cold. They get cancer and then they get rid of cancer. They like to turn it into normal tissue. So these are just some really fascinating examples of how nature has created the ability to, in essence, turn back time and start over. A few other things, you know, the more extreme, you have organisms on this planet that don't age. You have organisms on this planet that age backwards. And you have some that actually even die and are reborn again. And ultimately, you know, we as humans are pretty bad at doing any of this stuff. You know, when we have disease or we're injured, at the most part, we don't get structure or function of any organs back. And we usually get, you know, scar tissue upon injury. And so ultimately, you know, it was our goal as a company to really sort of step back and look and say, you know what, are there clues here in nature that we can begin to tap into to sort of reawaken these capabilities in humans? Because the traditional pharmaceutical industry and the model that we've been sort of sitting under for the last 100+ years of liking to take pills that do little things and treat us is not going to accomplish the big picture, which is basically, as you said, starting over, turning back time, regenerating, repairing and rejuvenating. So that's been, you know, that's sort of the intro to how we got started and why we're so excited about this space.
I think it's fantastic that, you know, I mean, here's the reality of this, okay? I have a variety show, and like every single news segment I do, there's always something crazy about animals. New animals being discovered, new abilities they got. And when you talk to me about, you know, regeneration, you know, lizards or whatever, getting their tails back, stuff like that, I just think, wow, that'd be, you know, obviously a great thing to apply to, say, us, you know, who may lose a limb along the way for some reason. But then when you talk about age reversal, talk a little tiny bit more about that. That's really interesting because, you know, I hate to say this, Ira, I'm pretty sure you're aware of it, and most of my audience probably are as well, but we're all going to die someday. And I'd like to prolong that as long as possible. I really would. Can you talk a little tiny bit about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is, you know, it's something that I would agree. I want to, and I think most people on this planet would like to not just, increase their lifespan, but increase their health span. I mean, imagine being in the shape of a 20-year-old when you're 90. So, yes, I mean, there are organisms, there are certain jellyfish and hydras and whatnot that, go about their life and swim around in the ocean and do their thing. And later on decide they want to be a child again. And they basically, using the tools of de-differentiation and other complex remodeling capabilities, basically turn themselves back into a child. Now, obviously, I don't want to turn myself back into a five-year-old again, but the basic concept of how one erases the genetic and epigenetic changes that occur throughout a lifetime and start over again are known. And these capabilities have been known for decades now. It's a matter of reapplying them to humans. And so basically a lot of what we're focused on is what those steps entail, and then how, using proteins, peptides, other biotherapeutics that typically you would find in the pharmaceutical industry, how you put them together in a creative way to stimulate that reversal and regeneration event in humans. Because that, in our opinion, I mean, obviously everyone sort of knows what aging is, and we all look in the mirror, we all age, but there's always been a big debate in the scientific community of what causes it. In our particular case, we are a little less interested in whether it's about inflammation or oxidation or a variety of sort of the downstream stuff. We're interested in the big picture and how it occurs in the first place and why it occurs every day of our life from the point we're born to the point we die, and how we can tap into that knowledge and push that dial back a little bit. So yes, I mean, there's a lot to be learned from the species that are capable of doing it. And then, as mentioned, there is also a wide range. You know, if you separate, you know, we lose, unfortunately, 150,000 people every day on this planet. About 2/3 of them leave this place because of aging and age-related diseases. The other third we lose because of acute trauma to the central nervous system. So this is the other part of the equation. If you talk about the big picture and long life, life extension, not only do you have to deal with aging, but you have to deal with death. And there are, when we talk about the brain and the central nervous system, the main definition of death and why we all leave this place ultimately is because the brain dies. Yet, we have many organisms on this planet that can basically have their brains blown apart, and they reform, and they regrow, and they don't die from loss of the brain. So these two aspects of nature have been known for decades now. It's now about revisiting them and using the tools that we have now with us in 2017, which are different than what we had 50 years ago when we first defined death, and now using them for beneficial purposes and not just for definitions.
Really, really interesting stuff, you know? I mean, I want to live forever. Everyone listening to this podcast wants to live forever. What do we do to get there? Well, I guess it starts at the molecular level. Now, before we started our conversation, we kind of touched base a little bit before we started, and you kind of mentioned there's some things in our wonderful history of just really strange, odd stuff that you wanted to talk about. I mean, it is an odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. It is a weird show. It has to be a little weird. And everything you've told me right now is actually just really, really fascinating, real life, less on the go stuff. This is all very applicable. But you said there's some things that have happened in history that, just boggles the mind. So, yeah, let's touch on some of those subjects.
So, a lot of this, and I'll be glad to give you several examples, because they're very important for the public to understand and know, because, you know, when it comes to the human mind, consciousness, memories, there are many areas related to this that have popped up in the biotechnology arena over the last 80, 90 years, but that for the most part have been sort of ignored or forgotten. And I'll give a few examples. As mentioned, there are many organisms that lose and regrow brains on this planet. Amphibians, planarian worms, insects that, you know, turn into, you know, caterpillars that turn into butterflies, even mammals that hibernate for long periods of time, learn large amounts of the brain. Yet studies have shown that even with the ones whose brains you can destroy that regrow entirely, somehow they mysteriously retain memory from before the destruction event. This has been known since the early 50s, but it is completely unexplained even in 2017. There are other examples, including a wide range of the biologic phenomena of the human mind, that the concept of the sort of the brain being the sole repository of our information, our memories, our consciousness, just they don't make any sense. Here's a few examples. We have a phenomenon known as terminal lucidity in Alzheimer's patients, which for some rare reason on their deathbeds will all of a sudden become completely lucid and remember everything as if they never had the disease before. You have gain in function events, like in the you know, the movie Rain Man that maybe people are familiar with, where there is an enhanced memory following destruction. And then you have these strange situations in children that are born so-called hydroencephalic, where they're born without a cortex. They're born with only the lower brain. They have no upper brain, yet they are conscious. And lastly, you have, and I'm getting a little more esoteric here, but you want some weird stuff. You have a wide range of cases, and many of these are, you know, have been studied at the University of Virginia Center for Perceptual Studies, of these children that know things that there's no way possible they would have ever learned. You know, three-year-olds that for some reason know everything about World War I fighter pilots and so forth. So, you know, these are all sort of wonderful examples that the, you know, the biologic mind concept that it's everything is inside your skull don't explain. And lastly, you know, I mentioned the fact that, you know, there are several dozen cases in the literature. You can go on to PubMed, NIH right now, and Google and search on them, of cases of brain death reversal in the literature. And this is one of those things that, you know, we has been defined once again since the 1960s as sort of being this irreversible state. And it is the main reason that why we define death as such. Yet these cases are out there. And they're once again, they show that things may not always be black or white with regard to what death means and ultimately how we can reapproach it using 21st century tools. Lastly, there's just one other thing I wanted to hit on, and that is the concept of non-neural memory. A lot of this research is quite fascinating and is going on at Tufts University here in the United States. But basically, we forget that the central nervous system and nerves in general evolutionarily came very late. But there are organisms on this planet that don't have brains. They communicate without neurons. And what we're also finding out is that many of parts of our bodies, our heart, our pancreas, bone, even schools of sperm as they search for an egg, are all communicating electrochemically without neurons. And so this whole concept that information can be stored elsewhere and not just in the central nervous system, adds really a whole new dimension of the possibilities of what we can discover by going down this path especially as it pertains to central nervous system reanimation research and rejuvenation. So we're pretty excited about all of this and sort of connecting some of these oddball areas with sort of the new knowledge and beginning to really explain them and fully understand, you know, what the mind is, where it goes, what consciousness is about. And it's really an exciting time, I think.
And I think that's as soon as you said that, I was like, wait, there's our common ground. You know, in my spare time, I am a paranormal investigator. One of my favorite things to do is to go out and look for examples of electronic voice phenomena, which some people believe are the voices of the dead. I happen to believe they may not be dead at all. I think it might be an extra dimension of space that surrounds us all. Could that be where that information is being stored? You know, the idea that, you know, the frog doesn't know how to reform its limb, or the lizard doesn't know how to reform its limb, that information has to be somewhere. I mean, how the heck did that evolve? It's kind of...
Absolutely. I mean, you're touching on a very important part of so-called, you know, post-material sciences. So basically, yeah, I mean, you hit on a beautiful part that when it comes to things like form and structure, you know, these are not things that are encoded in the genes. No one, you know, there's no gene that tells what a heart, how a heart should form. There is no gene that says what the brain should form and where it should be and where it, what it looks like. So, yes, I mean, the concept that there is information that's being passed down from other levels that ultimately control that output and use the genes as just sort of tools to allow for these the formation of these structures is quite logical. And most interesting to me, you know, I mentioned some of the work at Tufts, but there's other, you know, baskets of it occurring all over the world now, is how we're beginning to re-merge the themes that are found in early 20th century physics with biology. You know, if you and I would say, if you and I went in a time machine and we went back 100 years and we, you know, went to some biology lab, the terms you would hear back then in 14 would be kind of strange, because there was no, they didn't talk in biologic terms as much. They used things like fields and forces and waves and more of these physical terms. And a lot of that was forgotten. And now what we're seeing is a reemergence of these ideas with concepts like bioelectric fields, which are run throughout our bodies. We're hearing about biomagnetic resonance, and basically is a way that DNA communicates. So, you know, all of these concepts, which were sort of just thrown away when, you know, we learned about genes in 1950, have now come back to the table, because genes don't explain anything by themselves. All genes do is encode proteins. There's higher levels of architecture at work there, physical and beyond. And yes, we are in complete agreement with you that the knowledge of how to form an arm or an eyeball or a heart is not something that is tangible, but may exist as information in space-time that, you know, we are just each generation tapping into as a tool, as opposed to just being the seat of that information. So, yes, well, we're on the same page with regard to those concepts, and think that there's quite a bit still remaining to be discovered about how all of this links up.
And, you know, as soon as I said common ground, I just, I love that. I love that we can connect on that idea, and my audience will love it too, because you know what? You haven't got to look very far. If you want to see the world get really weird, just go into physics in particular. Yeah. Like, the smaller you go, the weirder it gets. Let's be honest, right? Yeah. Now, on your website, it says BioQuark Inc. is focused on the development of novel biologics that have the ability to naturally modify the regulatory state of human tissue and organs, with the goal of curing a range of chronic degenerative diseases, as well as affecting complex regeneration. That's a really fancy way of saying, we're trying to cure diseases and let you guys live longer. So my thing to ask you is, what are some of the advances you guys have already kind of discovered? Anything going on there? That you, like, what are some of the feathers in the cap, so to speak?
Well, one of the main areas that we're interested in, I mentioned a bit about this, is cancer. And the fact that we have 14 million new cases each year around the world. 8 million of us are going to die from it every year. And despite that, we have these new smart drugs and immunotherapies and really high-tech stuff, we still have a problem. The main focus of the oncology system, whether it's the old sort of chemotherapy approach or the newer, fancier smart drug approach, is the fact that in cancer, it's always a kill event. Now, that might seem kind of strange. Well, you think, okay, well, cancer is something you want to kill. But as I mentioned, there are many species out there in nature that don't die of cancer like we do. Why? They don't focus on killing cancer. They focus on changing cancer. They focus on changing it back into what it used to be, normal, healthy tissue that had an accident. And so this, we feel, is one of the missed opportunities and one of the things that we're trying to reconnect using our technology is basically how, instead of killing away, I mean, you wouldn't, chop out part of your brain if you had Alzheimer's disease. You know, you don't cut out your pancreas when you have diabetes. We want to change, turn back time, and start over. Same for diabetes, same for Alzheimer's, same for cancer. And so we've been having a lot of exciting activity in the lab with regard to breast cancer, glioma, some other cancers we've been looking at, and basically how we can normalize the tissue and let it reintegrate into what it used to be. And so this is a major part of our program. The other major thing that we are looking at as a company is, of course, the central nervous system, but not just the higher central nervous system, which is as a major focus, but at the same point, the spinal cord, because spinal cord injuries, still a major unmet medical need. Salamanders, you chop that spinal cord in half, they're up and walking 2 weeks later and no problem. We want to get people out of wheelchairs.
Yeah.
And we've been having some very exciting results on this front with some first-in-human work that we've been doing with clinical partners. Stem cells were going to be sort of a holy grail for this area 20 years ago, but didn't really pan out. What we're looking to do, once again, is basically how we tell the human body to, in essence, act like the salamander and regenerate in a proper way, as opposed to just dumping more cells in, but really re-stimulating, reprogramming, and restarting the development of that spinal cord again. So these are two exciting areas of ours. But ultimately, we're going to be taking a rather broad approach to all human diseases, because at the end of the day, it's all about cellular degeneration and damage.
Ira, such a pleasure talking to you. A lot of the stuff you said, just really hit home for me, because my father diagnosed with 4-stage renal cancer. Maybe 10, 20 years down the road, someone like my father won't have to suffer anymore because someone like you opened their mind to new concepts and ideas, Ira. I think you're a hero. And thank you so much for being on the Odd the New Philand Paranormal Podcast. Where can people learn more about your work?
Just come to the website, bioquark.com, and any questions, you can always use the form on the website, and we'll be glad to get back to you as soon as possible. And we love talking about what we do because we're excited and passionate about it.
Nah. Well, I'm glad you are. All kinds of fun stuff, salamanders, you got it. Ira, have yourself a great night, okay?
You too. Thanks so much for having me, John.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the New Philand Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the New Philand Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the New Philand Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.